Of this amount, the total force was short 1,211 fighter pilots.
The Air Force is facing serious staffing challenges. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Friday, May 4th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, new legislation would make it easier to track the owners of derelict vessels.
It ends up people saying, oh no, that's not my boat. That's that guy's boat. I sold it to him yesterday for, you know, $15 on a bar napkin.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. 4 out of 5 Alaskans addicted to heroin started by using prescription opioids. Common opioids include hydrocodone, oxycodone, morphine, fentanyl, and codeine. Safely getting rid of unused opioid medication prevents anyone from taking them without permission, which could endanger them and lead to consequences with law enforcement. Find out more at opioids.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the State of Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
The Air Force has a multi-billion dollar problem with one of its most expensive assets, pilots. The American military overall is having trouble filling its ranks. For the Air Force, the issue is retaining pilots after they've gone through years of costly training. Alaska Public Media's Zechariah Hughes reports the staffing problems are only likely to get worse in the years ahead.
Wherever there are fighter pilots, there's popcorn. At Air Force bases around the world, elite flyers have a ritualistic affinity for, very specifically, spicy jalapeno popcorn.
Every single fighter squadron across the Air Force, you will find a popcorn machine that produces jalapeno popcorn, and one of the finest lieutenants to run the machine to make sure that it is going.
Lieutenant Colonel Dave Skalitsky commands a squadron of fighter pilots at Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson in Anchorage and flies F-22 Raptors. Planes are one of the most agile, powerful jet fighters in the world, and Alaska is a choice assignment for getting to fly them. F-22s are regularly scrambled to intercept Russian long-range bombers that approach the U.S., and the wide-open training ranges mean pilots have free rein to push the cutting-edge machines to their limits.
You know, it's like getting tossed the keys to an Indy car and going, all right, take her out, go do it.
Just becoming an Air Force pilot is competitive. Surviving years of officer training, academic work, and testing in order to fly jet fighters is a whole other echelon. Which is why it's surprising that even in Alaska, the Air Force is contending with a staffing shortage so severe that one general labeled it the National Air Crew Crisis.
Of this amount, the total force was short 1,211 fighter pilots.
Last year, Lieutenant General Gina Grosso told a House Armed Services subcommittee the Air Force is falling short with the pilots who fly bombers and cargo planes too, but the problem is most acute with jet fighters. For more than a decade, the gap between the number of pilots authorized and the number actually serving has widened. According to the latest figures, more than a quarter of the positions are unfilled. Grosso says this isn't just a liability for military readiness and national security, it's also really expensive. The upper end estimate is that the current pilot shortage amounts to a $12 billion capital loss.
Make no mistake, your Air Force is always there. However, being always there comes at a cost to equipment, infrastructure, and most importantly, our airmen.
So why are all these young, highly trained elite pilots leaving? One of the main reasons is that commercial airlines are hiring them away. Globally, more planes are in the air. There are more passengers on commercial airlines, more cargo for freight carriers, and an accelerating demand for qualified pilots. Amid this commercial boom, the pay is way better. But that's just a piece of what's going on.
It's not about the money.
David Gould retired from the Air Force as a colonel after 26 years in, much of it spent flying C-130 cargo planes. Now he works for United Airlines. The pay bump is nice, but he says the main reason that pilots leave is tied to the same reason they join in the first place. They just want to fly as much as they can.
That's just so much fun. And if they, I would guarantee it on my life, if you just had them do it enough, nobody would get out.
The problem, according to Gould, is Air Force pilots are in the cockpit less and less. Instead, they're spending more time in trainings and handling administrative duties.
And after a while, you kind of look back and go, I'm a pilot, and I'm flying, if I'm lucky, once a week. What am I doing the other 80% of my time? Stupid paperwork that doesn't have to be done.
This isn't just one retiree's griping. A recent government report found the same thing. It also found that pilots cite the Air Force lifestyle as one of the main reasons for leaving. Prolonged deployments, long workdays, and frequent moves, a battery of sacrifices that strain family life. Gould says many younger pilots, after they've met their service requirements, look around and decide that the chance to keep flying cool planes isn't worth the headache and personal sacrifice. And at the squadron level, commanders like Skalitsky try to tap into pilots' enthusiasm for the work itself.
What I'll tell you is that there's so much energy and so much drive in these people, in this professional Corps of Airmen that we have, that harnessing that energy, focusing it to get this mission done is more of a privilege than a challenge.
Air Force leadership is keenly aware of the pilot problem. They've increased the bonus pay given to pilots who re-enlist midway through their careers. They're also shortening some deployments, are experimenting with letting pilots stay at bases for an extra hitch to spare them extra moves, and have hired contractors to take on some of the administrative work. In Anchorage, I'm Zachariah Hughes.
Boat and fishing vessel owners will likely be required to meet new registration and title requirements next year. The change is part of Senate Bill 92, which passed through the state legislature this week. The bill aims to give the state, municipalities, and individuals more tools to hold owners of derelict and abandoned vessels legally liable. KBBI's Aaron Bolton has more.
The Senate sent the bill to Governor Bill Walker's desk Thursday after the House passed the legislation earlier this week. The bill makes three significant changes. It would make it easier to track vessel ownership via state boat registration requirements and a new titling program. It also lowers the legal bar to hold derelict vessel owners liable and would create a derelict vessel prevention program. Alaska Association of Harbor Masters and Port Administrators Executive Secretary Rachel Lord worked with a statewide task force to craft the bill. She says the new registration and title requirements would create a better paper trail for vessel ownership.
It ends up people saying, oh, no, that's not my boat. That's that guy's boat. I sold it to him yesterday for, you know, $15 on a bar napkin. And it sounds kind of silly and trite, but it happens all the time all over the state.
Currently, federally documented vessels are not required to register with the state, but that would change under the new law. Non-federally documented boats over 24 feet would also be required to have a title of ownership. Homer Harbormaster Brian Hawkins also worked on the state task force. He says the bill would specifically help ports and harbors track down owners of federally documented boats at risk of becoming a problem, which he says tend to be old commercial fishing vessels.
We didn't know how many documented vessels were actually operating in the state, and it's that fleet that oftentimes would become the future derelict vessels, some of those as they just age out.
The bill also allows the state and municipalities to impose civil penalties, and individuals could take action against owners of derelict vessels in civil court. Currently, derelict vessel owners can only be charged criminally, but the law also imposes stiffer penalties for those found guilty. Holly Wells is Homer City attorney and is a shareholder at Birch, Horton, Bittner, and Shiro in Anchorage. Wells helped the task force craft the bill's language, and she says the legislation not only lowers the legal bar, but it also clears the path for small communities and villages to give notice, impound, and scrap derelict boats. Portions of the bill would not go into effect right away. It tasked the State Department of Natural Resources with creating a derelict vessel prevention program, which would be funded by title fees. Hawkins says the program's largest undertaking would be creating a cradle-to-grave plan for vessels in an effort to make sure vessels are disposed of properly.
When you look at the fleet with a critical eye, you'll realize that it is aging. There's a lot of vessels that are getting, in the 30s, 40s, 50-year-old range. And many of these will eventually become vessels that will need to be disposed of.
It's not clear when the bill might be signed into law, but Governor Walker has 90 days to either approve or reject the legislation. The bill would go into effect January 1st, 2019. Reporting in Homer, I'm Aaron Bolton.
Alaska Republican Senator Lisa Murkowski said this week that the Russia investigation by Special Counsel Robert Mueller III should be allowed to proceed to its natural end, and she would support legislation approved by the Senate Judiciary Committee to protect the inquiry. The Fairbanks Daily Newsminer reports that in an interview on Wednesday with its editorial board, Murkowski also praised the FBI and said the agency has a serious and significant role in the investigation. Murkowski added, however, that she doesn't want to see the investigation go on indefinitely. She said she thinks people of goodwill are working to make sure that doesn't happen. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, the Haines School Board renames the gym after allegations of past misconduct by its namesake.
You know, I hope that by changing the name that, you know, it provides some closure.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Did you know while exposed to secondhand smoke, every breath you take can damage your heart? Cells lining blood vessels become swollen and inflamed. Plaque builds, narrowing blood vessels, and clots can form, robbing the heart of oxygen. Exposure to secondhand smoke increases your heart disease risk by up to 30%. It's your heart. Protect it. This message sponsored by Alaska Tobacco Quitline, 1-800-QUIT-NOW.
The Haines Borough School Board has renamed the high school gym. The facility, known for decades as the Carl Ward Gymnasium, will now be called the Haines High School Gymnasium. As KHNS's Abby Collins reports, the action comes after allegations of sexual abuse by Ward were made public in the community. A note of warning, this story covers topics that may not be suitable for all listeners.
When I heard that there were people who walked by the gym or, you know, walked by the plaque and felt pain, you know, I just thought that was awful.
That's School Board President Anne Marie Palmieri. The high school gym was named after Carl Ward in the early 1990s. A sign bearing his likeness was hung in the hallway outside the gym, but it's since been removed. Ward worked as a teacher, principal, and superintendent at the Haines School from the 1950s through his retirement in the 1970s. Ward died more than 20 years ago. Last month, KHNS reported about alleged sexual abuse by Ward when he worked at the Haines School. Several former students of the Haines School have also shared memories of Ward's behavior, including inappropriate touching, with the Chilkat Valley News. Palmieri said she hopes the school board's action will help community members heal.
You know, I hope that by changing the name, that, you know, it provides some closure for people who were affected.
Us. Board member Sarah Chapel also supported changing the name.
I hear that it hurt people to walk by the gym. It's really terrible. And so I'm in full support of changing the gym name. I also would support at some point taking a look at whether it makes sense for us to have named facilities on our campus at all, and whether we should extend this change to other named places on the campus.
The board voted unanimously in favor of the name change. Last week, the Haines-Borough Assembly passed a resolution creating a policy for naming public facilities within the Haines-Borough. The new policy will require a public comment period prior to the adoption of a name for a facility, or if that name is to be removed. And public facilities can only be named after people 5 years after their death. In Haines, I'm Abby Collins.
The Alaska Senate has passed a bill that adds Hunting Preserve to the names of 8 state wildlife refuges. The original version of the bill passed by the House last year clears up boundary discrepancies for numerous state refuges and critical habitat areas. The refuge name changes were added in at the request of Senator Kathy Geisel, an Anchorage Republican. Geisel told the full Senate that it more accurately reflects the refuge's purpose.
Hunting is available in all of the places that we added Hunting Preserve. Mr. President, a lot of people seem to think hunting is a dirty word. I would I would oppose that attitude. As Alaskans, we should take pride in our hunting heritage, our hunting tradition.
The amended bill also replaces the word protect with conserve in regard to the refuge and habitat area's purpose, terms the Alaska Department of Fish and Game officials say are interchangeable, but Anchorage Democratic Senator Bill Wolakowski questioned.
If it's not going to change anything, why are we changing the words? Of course it's going to change something.
Wolakowski referred to a legal opinion that says the wording could sway future refuge management. He also expressed concern that the changes were made without opportunity for public comment.
We have gotten letters and emails and phone calls from people who are saying, no, don't change this. Give us an opportunity to weigh in on this. We don't know how this will change things.
The amended HB 130 passed the Senate 16-4. Some unexpected animals are loafing on beaches near Port Hyden this spring. The Bristol Bay Village on the north side of the Alaska Peninsula first reported seeing walrus in April. KDLG's Avery Lill has the story.
Port Hyden resident John Christensen was out for a four-wheeler ride on April 7th.
We went for a ride up the beach and ran into a large amount of walrus, a few hundred of them. We've never seen anything like this here before.
Over the course of a month, the residents saw more groups of the ungainly marine mammal resting on the shores, from Hook Lagoon to Stroganoff Point.
There's been an increase in the walruses. At first, there was only a few hundred and spotted pods all over the place. Now there's more. And at the most, we've seen at distance, we couldn't get a good view from the distance we were at, but it looks like there's over 1,000.
That was on April 25th. On May 1st, just 1 week later, area management biologist with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game, Bob Murphy, flew the shoreline from Pilot Point to Port Moeller.
We did see a group of about 100 walrus about 20 miles northeast of the village of Port Hyden on the beach. So we did see 100 animals where I've never seen 100 walrus hauled out before. Where they were, there was no cape or anything behind them. Usually walrus like to have a cape behind them sometimes. So these were just on a flat, sandy stretch of beach, and it just did not look like a typical walrus haul out. And it'll be interesting to see if they do stay there.
Walrus are guarded from harassment under the Marine Mammal Protection Act. Harassment could include noise from fishing boats. When more than 1,000 walrus hauled out at Cape Gregg in 2016 and 2017, Fish and Game changed the Ugashik District South Line to allow the walrus a one-mile buffer zone. It's too early to rule out such a measure for the Alaska Peninsula area, or to know if the walrus will even be there when commercial salmon fishing starts more than a month from now.
It could just be something they're just staging there for a little bit or resting, and they're eventually going to go to their traditional haul-out areas. So we're just going to keep an eye on it and see if they disappear or if more show up or if they move around. The place that they were in is an area that is close to commercial salmon fishing, so I think if they stayed there, they would be, you know, with no obstructions to anything. But more than likely, I would expect that they may move.
According to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, walrus have hauled out near Port Hyden before. But it's been about two decades. As Port Hyden residents wait to see if their new guests are here for the summer or just making a pit stop, they say that they're keeping their distance to ensure that they don't disturb the animals. In Dillingham, I'm Avery Lill.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Wells Fargo, offering financial tools to start, run, and grow a business. Learn more at wellsfargoworks.com. Each semester, undergraduate students at UAA are learning through hands-on research experiences that take them outside the classroom. Working alongside faculty and professionals in the field, students have used their research to begin exciting careers, to secure patents for their inventions, and to earn national academic accolades. Amazing stories are being written every day at UAA. More at uaa.alaska.edu/admissions. This message sponsored by UAA.
Ketchikan,
Kotzebue,
Dillingham,
Sitka,
Chugiak,
Fairbanks,
Fort Yukon,
Wrangell,
Barrow,
Unalaska, Dutch Harbor,
Alaknarechamut.
This is AK on Alaska News Nightly. I'm Dave Waldron. This week on AK, superheroes. Grossing more than $1 billion worldwide and boasting some of the highest critical reviews of the year, the movie Black Panther has become a global phenomenon. The film is also being praised for its primarily African-American cast and their nuanced roles. Last weekend, residents of Anchorage got a chance to get up close and personal with the film when one of the stunt women and actresses from Black Panther paid them a visit. Alaska Public Media's Wesley Early has the story.
Anchorage's Clark Middle School is the most ethnically diverse middle school in the United States, according to demographers. Last Saturday, in partnership with local nonprofit Shiloh Community Development Incorporated, the school hosted a youth summit, which ended with a talk from Janisha Adams-Ginyard, a stunt woman and actress from Black Panther. Cecily Williams is the school principal and helped organize the summit.
I just think it just has great inspiration and role models that are in that picture for so many levels of people.
From the sound in the auditorium, it was clear Adams-Ginyard was the highest anticipated moment of the summit. One of the attendees was Cal Williams, a local advocate and self-described performing historian. Williams, who has lived in Anchorage since 1965, said that his pool of role models who look like him was very small when he was growing up.
So we kids grew up idolizing Tarzan as opposed to the Africans. We sided with the cowboy as opposed to the Indians. We always wanted to be the hero and on the white horse with the white hat. That was the portrayal of heroes in my growing up.
Williams says that the film Black Panther serves as a template for getting rid of negative stereotypes of Black Americans.
Oftentimes, the only time we are portrayed on the news or in the media is associated with crime or something negative. And to have this positive image go forward is uplifting to our youth and to us older people as well.
One of the youth uplifted by the film is 13-year-old Nala White. She attends Clark and was part of the drumline that helped introduce the guest of honor that day. White says that oftentimes, films don't offer nuanced portrayals of Black people.
I feel as if there was maybe more representation of like maybe Black people who like anime in movies or who like to draw, who like art. And I just feel like there's not enough of that.
But today, there is no lack of diversity. Something very apparent to Adams-Ginyard, the guest of honor.
After speaking to everyone out there in the audience, I could see that.
Right.
I saw representation from almost all groups. Almost all groups.
Adams-Ginyard says when she was growing up, it was hard to find positive role models in the media, something she hopes she and other actors in the film can change. She wants young people to look at her and her castmates like she looked at her own personal hero, actress and singer Grace Jones.
Dark skin, beautiful, regal. I mean, she just, her presence commanded attention, you know, and she didn't have to say anything. And it was just like so powerful.
Throughout the summit, attendees attested to why Black Panther provided so many positive role models. Some noted the intelligence, poise, and power of the characters and the fictional Afrofuturistic nation of Wakanda. Ron Brown is an assistant principal at Bartlett High School, which happens to be the second most diverse high school in the country. He says he's optimistic we will see more of these characters due to the film's box office domination.
As long as we have people who look at the bottom line, which is dollars, I think this is only the start of something bigger. I have to believe that. I'm in education. I work with young folks. I have to believe that is what's going to happen in the future.
But for 5-year-old Debriah Rencher, she's just happy to have found her own connection with the character of Shuri, the titular protagonist's sister.
Because she had long hair.
That's why you liked her?
I like long hair people.
Yeah? Do you think you have long hair or you have short hair?
Long hair.
For AK, I'm Wesley Earth.
Wakanda forever!
Now it's time for 49 Voices. This week we're hearing from Lindy Kelleher in Anchorage. Kelleher is graduating from the University of Alaska Anchorage on Sunday and will be the student speaker at the commencement ceremony.
So my mom is not from the United States. She's from the Philippines. And so for her, she really pushed her children to, you know, get an education because after that, you know, you can do whatever you want. But like basically she was very, very encouraging of whatever and supportive of whatever we wanted to do. And so she, for me, she was like, yeah, you can go become the president and a doctor and a lawyer. But yeah, I always, my thing was like, oh, I'll be doctor, lawyer, Kelleher, future president. So there was never one thing that I was like, oh, my sights are set on this. It was always like, okay, you know, just get your education and then anything you want to do, like the door is open. when I went left for San Francisco, I was so heartbroken. I was like, this is not Alaska. Like, the trees are all wrong. I'm like, where do I go hiking? What do I do? And I had such a great childhood growing up here. I went to a really diverse school. The academics are great. I had a lot of opportunities. And so I would 100% want that for my own family. Yeah, you're crazy to leave Alaska. I think coming to UAA, it was really great because it gave me so many opportunities. And I never knew that I would end up, you know, interning for the mayor. At the time, I was really interested in the economic empowerment of women. And so that's kind of what I pitched them with. And so they were like, you know, we're not doing anything specifically on that, but we have some programs that we're working on right now that have to do with empowerment of youth and immigrants and minorities. And definitely the work that can be done for empowering women can be applied to all of these other communities. And so I'm kind of like, if there was a way that I could just join like urban planning and policy together and then do all that work at once, that would be my like dream job. I always joke about saying that I want to be mayor, but it's like, I kind of do want to be mayor, but I think I would hate running for office just because I'm like, it's so much work being in the public eye, but I feel like it's a definite possibility that you'll see my face somewhere being like, vote for Lindy. So.
Lindy Kelleher lives in Anchorage. 49 Voices is AK's attempt to put every Alaskan on the radio. Thanks for listening to AK this week. We had help from Wesley Early. Tune in next week for more unique stories from around the state. I'm Dave Waldron.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org/news. We had reports tonight from Zachariah Hughes in Anchorage, Aaron Bolton in Homer, Abby Collins in Haines, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, and Avery Lill in Dillingham. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Wesley Early is our web editor. And I'm Lori Townsend. Have a great weekend.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by Alaska Pipeline Service Company, sustaining Alaska's pipeline for 40 years and counting. First National Bank Alaska, offering online and mobile services to help Alaskans and their businesses bank on the go. Learn how experience and knowledge make the difference at fnbalaska.com. And by Alaska Heart and Vascular Institute, committing to improving the lives of Alaskans. Using a team approach, Alaska Heart and Vascular Institute offers a range of cardiovascular diagnoses and care. Learn more at alaskaheart.com. 4 out of 5 Alaskans addicted to heroin started by using prescription opioids. Common opioids include hydrocodone, oxycodone, morphine, fentanyl, and codeine. Safely getting rid of unused opioid medication prevents anyone from taking them without permission, which could endanger them and lead to consequences with law enforcement. Find out more at opioids.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the State of Alaska Department of Health and Social Services. This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.